Sleeves here with your Senior Pickleball Report, powered by TNC Network. Let's get it going. Today we speak with Ashley Underwood. She is the director, producer, one of the creative minds behind the Hollywood-produced Dreambreaker, A Pickleball Story. I happen to be in the film as one of the narrators, so we talk about all things professional pickleball, how the film was made, some of the challenges behind that, and a whole lot more. But before we get to that, if you like this channel and you like our content, consider subscribing and hitting the like button. Also, check out all the links below for discounts on equipment, from paddles and balls and nets to apparel to merch. Check out our merch page. There's always some deal going on there. And hey, subscribe to our newsletter for everything going on in the Pickleverse. All right, let's get to that interview with Ashley Underwood. All right, we are with Ashley Underwood, director, producer, co-creator of Dreambreaker, A Pickleball Story, a major Hollywood documentary. Welcome to the Senior Pickleball Report, Ashley.
Thank you. Thank you. it's good to see you again. It's been a while. We had so much fun.
We met, I think, about 2 years ago, right about now. You gave me a Zoom call similar to this, and I was sitting at my folks' house in Wisconsin, and you were talking about this documentary that you were going to make, and you were looking for people to be part of it. And that was, I believe, June of 2022. And so at that point, I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I had been really only doing the channel for about 4 months at that point. I think I had like 200 subscribers. So I was like, either A, they're desperate, or
that's not untrue.
or whatever. But I was like, holy cow, this is pretty neat. And then, you know, obviously everything takes time. And here we are 2 years later with the finished product. And we'll talk about the film in a minute. But before we talk about that, obviously, you know, pickleball has been a part of your life prior to the film. And, you know, enough so to you made a movie about it. So how did pickleball come into your life? Like, how did the game enter your world?
I had a friend of mine who had started to play, and I was actually a tennis player, but I kept asking her to play tennis with me, and she's like, you have to try pickleball. And this was sort of during COVID. And, there's Memorial Park down in Santa Monica. I guess it's a real scene. You know, she kept saying, this place is amazing. You have people from all walks of life. You know, she's like, you just have, you know, like TV executives playing with firemen and, you know, just all types of people, older people, younger people. And she's just like, you know, this is my happy place. I love this sport. You know, just makes me feel happy, and you're getting exercise and you're getting to meet a bunch of interesting people. So, that's kind of how I got started playing, and it was during COVID, and then, just kind of got a group together that we sort of would play regularly. Like all of our husbands would play. It was like husbands and wives like playing together. I mean, usually it's like, you know, they're playing one sport and we're playing something different. Like they're off golfing and we're playing tennis. And this was nice because it was something everybody could play together.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously a very inclusive game, all levels, all ages. Okay. So obviously, you know, like most of us, myself included, you got involved during COVID, but I started a channel because of it. You decided you were going to make a film. So that's quite a leap from, you know, oh, I'm going to go play in Santa Monica and play with some friends, to going, I'm going to make a major motion picture about this sport. So walk us through a little bit kind of the process of how that came into your life and you decided to kind of go for that.
Yeah. I mean, I had a development job at the time, so I had like a little bit of money to explore, you know, to film like sizzle reels, like a proof of concept. The deal we had was with Apple actually at the time. So it was like, you know, we had this fund and a little bit of money to make these sizzle reels and then kind of present them. Like, is this something that you'd want to make and hopefully get, you know, a fully financed. And this is one of the first projects that I kind of pitched to them. And so we got a little bit of money to make a sizzle reel, and I it was really like an executive producer on the film, Isabel Thomas. It was her idea. She wanted to make something about pickleball. So I was kind of going with her idea, but we didn't really have anything more than that. And I started doing some research. I met Craig Coyne, who's my producing partner on the film. And he was writing, I think, one of the first pieces for Vanity Fair about pickleball. And I always laugh because there have been so many articles about pickleball, but he wrote really one of the first ones, and he had just done an incredible amount of research, and he kind of knew everybody in this sport, especially in the professional sport. And he was like, you should really, look into the professional side. I know that the rec side of the game is so popular, but he was just like, we didn't want to just tell an overview of like a phenomenon. We didn't want to show like, oh, this is, this is just widely popular. And like, here's a broad overview of why. We really wanted to find a story, kind of like an insider story, and kind of share that with a wider audience. So when I started to talk to Craig, he was just like, this is kind of a gold rush. Like there are these professional leagues and these players who are just kind of these trailblazers in the professional game. And it didn't take a lot of persuasion. I was just kind of immediately into the fact that that there was kind of a story in place there that was happening.
I mean, the story was, I think, being part of the film myself, the story was developing constantly throughout the process of making and developing the film. So the challenge seemed to be like what to put in, what to leave out, where, and ultimately where the story was going, because it's one thing to tell about a season, like you watch these sports documentaries, and it's about the last tennis season or the last Formula One season. But it's another thing where you sort of have no idea where it's going, and the challenge of that. Plus, getting access to people. So talk about some of the challenges, not only with the story continuing to develop as you were making the film, but gaining access to the people who were all of a sudden being introduced into the story, and whether or not you could talk to them at all.
Yeah. Well, I think the access changed from when we started filming till at the end. When we started out filming, it was, I think back in 2021, it was still kind of like a folksy, like community sport. Right. And had access to, actually it was Craig that kind of knew all of these people. I mean, that's like a documentary filmmaker's dream. It's like, I joke, I'm like, oh, he was like the straight A kid in class. And, I'm like, can I borrow your homework? Cause he already had the relationships. He knew the story. He had people trusted him. And I was just like, this is great. And I had, most of my producing experience had been a lot with Sacha Baron Cohen, which is scripted, but the script changes like a million times while we're filming something. So I was definitely used to this run and gun like filming approach, which is unique. And I think it's definitely a very specific thing and can be kind of intimidating. And you have to, everybody in your crew, I feel like, has to understand that this isn't all going to be planned out ahead of time. And you have to really be willing to roll, to just kind of roll with it as it unfolds. So that in and of itself was definitely challenging. And I know I relied on you for like a lot of, story, what's there were so many things happening and the sport was like changing so fast. And then we had to kind of decide, well, what do we want to spend money on? Like, what things do we want to fly out for with a film crew and put people up in hotels and sort of capture? And what things can we have, somebody like you do a video and maybe just like a video diary, just so we have, we can sort of, just chronicle like these different moments that are happening in the sport in case we needed to use them. We also use, some of the other podcasters in the pickleball space, like Jared from The Kitchen or Rob Nunnery has a podcast. Tyler Long, like those guys. There are a lot of different podcasts, and as we needed to fill holes in our story, you know, we would kind of grab from those too. So there were other resources other than just like going there ourselves and filming. But that made it challenging, but it also made it really fun and exciting. And the thing I think makes our film different than maybe other projects in the space is that I think we really captured like the birth of a professional sport, and it's a moment in time that can never be repeated.
Right.
Yeah. So that makes it unique. And in terms of access, so I was saying, you know, Craig initially had these relationships, but was very generous. And I developed my own relationships and sort of trust with players and league owners along the way. But like I said, in 2021, at that first Major League Pickleball event, we were the first camera crew, I think, to ever show up or take an interest. So everyone was gracious, and there was a real openness and willingness to participate. And then that is kind of more money came in and celebrity came in. And, you know, I think the Tom Dundon entry into the sport kind of was this real marker for a shift. Also when LeBron James like bought a team, I think that was a marker that really kind of shifted attitudes about the game and just, I don't know, a bit business attitudes, everybody's attitudes. And that did make access more difficult because the leagues, I think, they wanted to control their own narrative. They kind of wanted to control the media. They let us film. They were pretty, I would say, reasonably accommodating throughout the process. But I feel like there was definitely maybe a hesitation on their part just because there wasn't much creative control over what we were going to do. That was also important to me as a filmmaker. I didn't want to make branded content for a league.
Right.
And because that just, I know there are these Drive to Survive, these sort of formats that work for like a Netflix or something that, or you have the 30s or 30s or, but I really didn't want to make, I just wanted the freedom to be able to that creative freedom to tell the story that we wanted to tell. And I didn't really want league involvement, but I wanted their trust. I'm not, you know,
sure.
Wasn't looking to do anything, you know, outrageous, just kind of really more be a fly on the wall and just capture, what was unfolding. You know, and I didn't want to put a sheen on it or try to, you know, control a narrative around it. So I think that changed. The leagues wanted to kind of control their narrative or at least participate, maybe even in the monetary, like part of, you know, any media or filming that's being done in that space. And also the agents entered the sport during the time period that we were filming. So when we first started filming, there were no agents. Like Annalee Waters didn't have an agent. And then, you know, suddenly she did. And then that access became a little more difficult. And I think you can see in the beginning of the film, you know, we had, you know, really great access to her and her family. You know, and then, I think Ben Johns was strangely like so accessible, like maybe had the easiest access to him the whole time. He was very agreeable, kind of never said no to anything, was always an easy person to deal with. But yes, players started to become more aware of like their brand and their image. And I think there was just some nervousness maybe around like, well, you know, who are you guys? What is this film? And then there started to be so many projects in the space, and I would just, you know, and some people would like to say to me like, you know, oh, there's, you know, you hope you get to market soon because, you know, there's another project, you know, or everybody had people even had, you know, everybody's like, oh, I have my own pickleball, you know, documentary I'm doing, or I have my own TV show I'm pitching. Like there started to be a lot of that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think our film is pretty unique. And it's, you don't want to get in that headspace where you're thinking, you know, oh, these people are going to be first to market or they're making this. Like you just kind of have to be steady and focus on what you, you know, set out to do, which is to chronicle like the the birth of a professional sport and kind of the ups and downs. Lee Whitwell said at one point, she was like, it's the sport and it's terrible twos. And I just thought, well, that's, you know, we're, that's what we kind of want to capture, because it doesn't, it doesn't come along that often.
Right.
And it is that unique moment in time. So I feel like we captured that. But yeah, there were definitely challenges and things.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, yeah, you were documenting. I think that's the problem, is like what I've seen over the last whatever, maybe decade or so with social media, is the documentary has almost become this thing where now it's a branded commercial. You know, they see these docuseries for NASCAR and for, you know, Formula One and for the ATP Tour. And those are great, but they're really, to me, on some level, like long commercials. And they're entertaining in their own right, but they're not documentaries. And I think the idea, you know, when people start to get agents and things like that, they lose sight of like what this really is. Like, you know, we're the fly on the wall. We're documenting this. And obviously you can participate or not participate in it, but in a sport that's growing, that's taking off, it's sort of one of those things that you like to be seen. And I think the thing I felt about this whole process when I was involved in it, you know, I'd hear the same thing. There's other things coming up. There's other people making films. I'm like, well, at least the one I'm involved with, these are actually filmmakers. It's not some guy making it from his garage. You know, they're working with a studio that makes documentaries, and this is what they do. So my confidence in what y'all were doing and my participation in it was pretty high on that fact that, you know, these are professionals and this is what they do. You know, they make films and they make documentaries, and, you know, they're in it for professional reason, and not necessarily for self-promotion. So that's what I enjoyed about it.
Yeah, I think, well, every time I screen the film, you're just sort of universally like everyone's favorite part of the movie, including my own. you're so articulate, so knowledgeable about the sport. And you really have a fun way of getting information that's frankly, like it's complex and it's confusing.
It is.
You had a great way of like delivering that information and streamlining, you know, what the story is. And I also, I mean, here's the other thing that's unique about pickleball, because I know we decided to do the pro, you know, focus on the pros. And I know, I think, especially the feedback I got from like executives, like they were just like, oh, we really, you know, I think people really wanted it to be in the rec space, because you have all these characters and that's what people know. But once we decided to focus on this sport within like the professional space, I definitely wanted to include, you know, some of the culture and the people who are in that rec space. And we have, just to make the film like a bit more colorful. And also it's pretty unique. And it's pickleball is one of the only professional sports, like, you know, it's got like a kind of a wacky, like quirky side to it. And I wanted the film to have that tone too. So it's like, I want to honor the professionals and what they're trying to do. I mean, these people are real athletes. And so I want to honor that side of it, but it's like, you know, and when you go to the tournaments, what you see is you have pro players with the, you know, amateur or the recreational
player. Right.
They are coexisting at tournaments. So, and that's pretty unique about this sport, that those two can sort of coexist, or at least for the moment. But yeah, I feel like I really wanted to add in the color, and encompass, kind of the quirkiness of the sport and some of the, you know, the diversity, and the things that have made the sport, frankly, like, you know, so popular.
Are you a devoted pickleball enthusiast in search of top-notch gear and services? Look no further than Sleeves Affiliate Shop, your ultimate destination for all things pickleball. Not only will you discover an impressive selection of sleeve-specific merch gear, but you'll also get the chance to explore gear and merchandise that our terrific show host, Mike Sleeva, has previously reviewed. But that's not all. at Sleeves Pickleball Affiliate and Partner Shop. You'll find links to our friends of the show who offer pickleball-specific online stores, apps, and services. By stopping by and checking out our extraordinary collection, you not only enhance your game, but also show your support for our show, Sleeves Senior Pickleball Report. So why wait? Join us in celebrating the love for pickleball and dive into a world of top-notch gear and services.
Hey there. Looking for your daily dose of news, entertainment, and inspiration? Look no further because STM has got you covered. Check out our STM Daily News blog for the latest updates, insights, and practical tips about everyday life. Want a visual experience? Our vlog offers captivating videos that bring stories to life. And for those who prefer to listen on the go, our podcast dives deep into various topics that matter to you. But wait, there's more. Sign up for our STM and Coffee newsletter, filled with exclusive content and exciting updates. Don't miss out on the action.
Right, absolutely. And I think you did that. I mean, the first couple minutes of the film are fantastic with the sort of the introduction to what this culture is and how communal it is and how quirky and goofy it could be. And so I really enjoyed the intro of the game with Lee driving around and saying her stuff, and really, really cool. And that's the thing I think that you touched upon is it is the birth of a professional sport, but not in the sense of like anything we've seen before, you know, like, again, a lot of these sports started, a very long time ago, but the birth of the NFL, or the birth of the NBA, you just didn't have these coexisting communities of rec players with professional players. And whether we like it or not, the professional game heavily influences the rec game, mm-hmm. from equipment to rules. It just kind of works its way back down to, the masses, whether we like it or not. People are playing particular paddles because they see pros playing those paddles. They're wearing, particular shoes, and sometimes the rules change because it fits the pro game, and then it works its way down to the amateur level. The same thing happened in beach volleyball, in sports that are, have developed big time over the last few decades. So I think picking the pro game, much more storytelling. And as you experienced and I experienced, an unbelievably complex story to tell, considering it's a wiffle ball game. I couldn't believe once I got involved with this, all the moving parts, and I have no envy for who had to edit and make choices and draw storyboards, because like we mentioned earlier, it just changed daily. Yeah. It not only changed, your film changed daily, and it changed a lot near the end. I mean, I didn't get, involved in the filming process, coming out to see me, until the last few months. And by that point, things were changing literally daily, like monumental things where, you think you have an end to something and it's a beginning to another thing. So maybe talk about that, because I don't know how you slept.
Yeah.
I really don't, because holy cow.
Yeah. I mean, there were moments. I do feel like this film does have now a very almost in kind of like a Hollywood formula, like does have a very clear like beginning, middle, and end.
Yes.
Which is a little serendipitous, because you run out of money at some point, and you it's not as easy as doing a retrospective, like, oh, this happened, when they were trying to start.
Right.
So it was, I mean, honestly, one of the bigger moments that we filmed, and I don't know if it comes off as dramatic, in the movie, I think it does, was filming Steve Kuhn and Julio in their apartment in New York City. And they are, Steve has this moment where he's, I guess the merger is off and he's going to try to get these players back. And you're kind of rooting for him. I mean, I was, okay, that's a bold move. I don't know how this is going to unfold. I don't have anybody wherever the PPA war room was. I don't know if they were in Kansas or somewhere, but I was like, I don't have anybody there. And I have a film, you know, one of our, my co-director lived in New York. That's an easy place to just grab a camera, get somebody there. Definitely not an easy thing to get access to.
Right.
So, you know, I was just like, oh, okay, well, at least we're going to know what the ending is. Like, I think we'll know pretty soon. Yeah. There will be a big fallout from this and something, there will just be a clear winner after this. I feel like not winner, but you know what I mean? And I didn't expect it to take the turn that it did. I don't think anybody did. And then, you know, and I couldn't get an interview with Tom Dundon like the entire time that we were filming. You know, he didn't really want to participate. And his reasoning was always, you know, I want this to be about the players, not about the league owners. It should be about them.
Are two different things, you know.
So I, you know, that made sense to me. I'm not sure if that was actually the reason. But in the end, I was able to get an interview with him, and I really just had no money left to film anymore. I just went to, Texas, you know, like one, I think just a local crew. I went by myself. So I was really grateful to get that interview in the end because, you know, just because of how everything turned out. Yeah. And he sort of emerged, you know, the PPA emerged as, you know, that's the group going forward. And it would have felt to me like an incomplete film if I didn't have that interview with him at the end. But I felt like I was on a roller coaster ride, you know, every day there was just some news that was totally different from what you believed, you know, the day before.
Right, right. Yeah. And I, you know, obviously those two scenes you just discussed, the war room scene, I think was monumental to get that footage for the film. It really was great access. I mean, I was somewhat shocked that we got to see that in the way we got to see it. It really started to build the drama. And then I love the part, the choice of just showing the chair before Tom comes in, because you're sort of waiting for this guy the entire film, sort of the man behind the curtain pulling the strings and da 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 da. And finally he sits down and, you know, it's sort of kind of wraps that, puts a bow on sort of what happened. You have those two scenes that are right there at the end that really sort of, because it was a sort of this feel good movie, like you're rolling along and you're going along. And then you're like, there's a couple whiplash moments there and you're like, what the heck just happened?
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, thinking about it myself and talking about it on camera. And I was like, where else could this possibly go?
right.
I was almost thinking like, can we just wrap before anything crazier happens than what happened with Steve?
That Tom Dundon interview. That was like, I was like, okay, I'm out of money now. Like nothing else can happen. Like, I'm just gonna, I don't know, like do a voiceover. please don't let there
be a Star Wars scroll or something. I love that it somehow, like you said, serendipitous, it came to fruition at the end. No matter who you were rooting for, how that played out, the film had a moment where it ended, and you saw these relationships run their course on some level, and this storyline run its course on some level. And it had to be satisfying because it was touch and go there. Obviously, you know, you were worrying about a budget and, you know, what you could film still, what choices you had to make on what to film, where to go to. And I think that's a misconception. I think people think, oh, you know, she's making a Hollywood movie. She's got, you know, tens of millions of dollars. And I'm like, no, it's a documentary. it's not like, you know, Brad Pitt's in the film. I think that's another misconception. Like people just have like, oh, you know, you just, how much could it cost to go do this? And you know, when y'all would come and film me, it was like, I couldn't believe what it took on some level, you know. And I've worked in production stuff before, but I still was like blown away by the equipment that needed to be hauled there. The team that needed to be put together and to do all those things, when you come see me off grid,
That was a real adventure. Yeah. That was one of my favorite parts.
But just plug into a wall to charge stuff all the time. So yeah. Kudos to y'all and you handle it like champs, because where I live, not many people have been to, and when they see it, their first reaction is like, whoa, what is this? And then to actually have to do something at a professional level that is going to be seen by people and represent your work, your art. When I saw the film, I was relieved that I didn't get up.
No, quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. Because
I was like, oh God.
No, I think you made it. It makes it really fun. And you don't want it to be dry, and it's a complicated
story. Yeah, you don't want a boring documentary. We've seen enough Ken Burns stuff, and it's great. Yeah, but at the end of the day, you want to be entertained.
I wanted to like the opposite of Ken Burns. I really wanted it to be to be entertaining and to be fun. I wanted it to have depth, but I also wanted it to have, you know, heart and most importantly humor, because I don't know, that's my background. That's what I'm drawn to. I feel like anything that I do, it's probably going to be filtered a little bit through that lens, because for me, that's what I find enjoyable, you know? So I think, I think this film is, it's kind of a story about like American ambition, and it's kind of a reflection of our culture and our society. Like, you know, the people trying to cash in on something that's just become, you know, widely popular. And I think that they're, you know, you admire that at times about, you know, who we are. And then sometimes it's cringy.
And for sure.
And then I think that there's an underlying, you know, humor to that, you know, kind of all along the way. I hope that people like it. I hope the people who are in the film like it, because I think we worked really hard as filmmakers to, you know, to write a love letter to the sport and everybody who is in it. Because I think, you know, a lot of people have really poured like blood, sweat, and tears into this.
That's why I was happy I didn't screw it up.
Including us. Including us. So we were on a journey too. Like it was a different journey, but we were like on an adjacent sort of similar journey. So
don't
count the filmmakers who are also kind of suffering through it in our own right.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was worried about. Like, you know, when y'all were going to come out and stuff like that, I was like, man, I hope they know what this is, because I, you know, and I was not worried about like that you couldn't handle it. I was more worried about like you'd show up and go, oh, no, this might have been a vocational error choice.
No,
but it worked out fine. It worked out fine. My buddy who is in film told me, he said the parts with the yurt, Mike, that was the ginger. It changed the taste of the film once in a while, because you saw all this professionalism and stuff going on. And then they cut, you know, to rural New Mexico, and that kind of, you know, pulls you back to reality in some ways.
Yeah, it's like a little palate cleanser. You're just like, when I watch it in a room full of people, like at that San Francisco Doc Fest where we were sold out. We were the only film that sold out. I was very proud of that.
You should be.
You know, I sat in the back row, and it was so fun to watch people experiencing the film kind of in the way that I would hope that people would experience the film, you know, like that you could hear the noises or the sounds people make when something is, you know, shocking or surprising. Sure. I loved hearing people laugh at the places that I wanted them to laugh. And there's definitely this moment every time we kind of cut back to you, you can feel the whole room, like the audience, just really loving that they're getting to see you again and hear from you again in the film, because they're looking forward to it throughout. You know, they know we're going to come back to you, and they know there's going to be, you know, just this little palate cleanser, if you will, or, you know, a moment of levity, really.
Yeah.
So,
and I needed somebody to point that out to me, and my buddy did, because I watched it with him and his partner and some friends, and him and his partner are both are in the film industry. And Karen and I, my wife, were like, you know, I'm like, I was awesome. I'm glad my parts turned out. But my wife and I literally turned to each other and went like, why was I in the film? Like, did I need to be in the film? And he goes, absolutely. He was the one he pointed out. He goes, you were the ginger. You changed the palette of the film. He goes, I've worked in this stuff before. He goes, without that in it, mm-hmm. it's a different film. It doesn't mean it's a bad film or anything like that. It just changes sort of where the momentum of things, and you get to take a breath or whatever he said it was. And so I felt better about that, because I was like, this film is fine. Absolutely great. And I enjoyed it without me. I really do. But I felt like when he told me that, I'm like, he sort of justified it for me. I was like, okay, I don't know anything about, obviously, you know, filmmaking on that level. So it made sense. And to hear you say it, it makes sense as well. So,
yeah.
And I appreciate the compliment. I do. I truly do. Because, you know, when you watch yourself on screen, I'm like anybody else. I'm self-critical. I don't like to see certain things. And I'm like, you see it and you go, oh, that's what I sound like. Or, oh, that's what I really look like. But I was happy and very proud to be part of the film, because I think it's really well done. And I think it tells a very, believe it or not, people, a pickleball story is very complex. And I think it does a great job of telling it, because there are so many moving parts and they were constantly moving. So kudos to you and your team, because there's no way I could have made that film. There's just no way.
you did what you did for the film is, I think, the best part of the film, and it really helps people understand the story. You know, I was screening it for people and they were just like, wait, I'm confused. Like, what's this league? What's that? Like, there are three leagues, yeah, or two. And I just think that, you know, you're super articulate, and you got the information across in a way that people could understand it. You know, and you're a colorful character and person and personality. And I just think that, I don't know, it definitely helped with the tone and the momentum of the entire movie. So I'm really glad that we got to work together. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, if you would have told me 2 years ago, you know, when we were meeting for the first time, what it would have been, I would have been thrilled. And it's beyond what I expected it to ever be. So thanks for the opportunity. And I am super, super proud of the film. And I'm looking forward to people getting to see it on a massive level. So when it starts to stream on a regular basis, we will let folks know. But for those of you that had a chance to see it, spread the word. It's a great film. It'll be out eventually for other folks to see and consume and enjoy and talk about. And I appreciate your time. Anything before we go, Ashley, that you'd like to say?
Make sure say thank you to your friends who wrote the song at the end, the song in the film. You guys, they were fantastic too. Really,
yeah, great. And that was a lot of fun. You know, we co-wrote a song that goes at the end of the film, and we were so very proud and fortunate to get into the film and lead it out. So appreciate that, and super fun writing it, and got to record it in a studio as well. So we got to feel like real musicians.
It's great. We love it.
Yeah. All right, Ashley, thanks for your time, and looking forward to seeing it, hopefully out sometime this summer or the fall. And Dream Breaker, A Pickleball Story, coming somewhere to you very shortly. And check it out, watch it multiple times, share it with your friends and family. Thank you, Ashley.
Hope you enjoyed our interview with Ashley Underwood. Hope to see the movie out in mass shortly. Dream Breaker, A Pickleball Story. Hopefully we can see it somewhere on some streaming service soon. Great film. I think you would enjoy it. Plenty to talk about. And, you know, when it comes out, I'll let you know and share it with friends and family as well. All right, folks, you know what to do at the end of the day. Hey, let's pickle.